Welcome to the A-News Podcast. My name is Aragorn. This is episode 5, the April 2nd episode. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the last week and beyond. We hope for this podcast to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most of the citations can be found at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. This is a long episode because the last one was produced 2 days early, and this has been a busy week. On our minds. This week is April Fool's Week. Obviously, anarchists do not have a sense of humor, and anyone who would say we do is a dirty liar. But it sure would be nice if we did. We could see our project, the total transformation of daily life, as a hysterical absurdity. We could see our comrades as human, all too human, beings, and not revolutionary robots set to kill, kill, kill. And like most things, the internet has co-opted and killed the devilish pranks of April Fool's Day. But let's not hope our own silly little pranks are read in the spirit that they were intended, and not in the spirit of indignant poops. Editorial: A Failure to Communicate. We'll talk about our friend Sean Wilbur's blog post about this topic later in this episode, but suffice it to say that I agree broadly with his description of some anarchists' willful failure to communicate, but I am perhaps less interested in being as fair-minded as Sean is. Anarchism has changed in the nearly 30 years I've been involved, and obviously, by the time I became part of this tradition, born of the beautiful idea, it had changed several times prior. By the time I took part in it, anarchism was starting to grow beyond the anarchism of crass and punk rock politics. It was starting to federate and look towards greener pastures than subculture and youthful zeal. Murray Bookchin was still alive, and unbeknownst to me at the time, was kind of a big deal. I share most of the post-left criticisms of Murray, and in particular, on rereading Social Anarchism versus Lifestyle Anarchism, find it to be a uniquely corrosive document in terms of attempting to communicate, but I do think that it is a useful document on this topic, both as a model of how not to do it, and as a template that some have used ever since to win the unwinnable fight and to say a piece about some imagined other and how bad they are. And of course, I will say the same things, maybe worse, about the writings of Bob Black, who has always used communication as a cudgel. The point here is that we have chosen to balkanize anarchism. We, on occasion, have pretended we're all on the same team and write wide-eyed, innocent essays misunderstanding how other factions could have ever come to the positions that they have, and how our faction wouldn't do anything like that at all. I've mostly seen those who refer to internecine conflicts put on the defensive, as if they have to explain why an underemployed social anarchist professor and a traveling anti-social anarchist rewilder could possibly ever disagree. This pretending is also the source of our failure to communicate, because it is in the interest of some to own the conversation. It is in the interest of some to emphasize the qualities of civil discourse while minimizing the passions of a shout. Some people get to speak at book fairs, even though they have nothing to say, and are going to blame the Republicans for a unique moment in a room full of anarchists, rather than clearly build something small that could grow with people we know. We'd rather pretend we were never in subculture, for fear to not be seen as a serious adult. We'd rather fail than be seen trying. We'd rather communicate in cliques and to crowds we know already agree with us, than communicate dangerous ideas that might not be popular. What's new this week? Boxcar Books needs help. Bloomington, Indiana's Boxcar Books is asking for help to keep Boxcar Books going. For various reasons, we're facing difficulty keeping our space open and need help. We currently don't have money to pay for rent in April, and we'll have to close if we can't raise at least $1,000 by next week. Boxcar has continued to expand its project, being a visible, unapologetic, radical space. It's home to the Midwest Pages to Prisoners Project, which sends thousands of books and zines each year to prisoners across the U.S. It hosts events by Bloomington Anarchist Black Cross, including a monthly prisoner info and letter writing night, benefit events for prisoners, and a monthly anarchist movie night. It facilitates and houses a twice-monthly anarchist reading group that's become a popular, visible point of connection to anarchist ideas in Bloomington. It's the only consistent space in Bloomington in which anarchist, revolutionary, and otherwise subversive literature is consistently available. Most importantly, it has served as an informational hub for social struggles, including the September 9th, 2016 prisoner strike. Losing this space would be a serious blow to dozens of anarchist projects in Bloomington and anarchist struggle here as a whole. Anarchists fighting ISIS in Rojava announced a new formation. Today, we announce the formation of the International Revolutionary People's Guerrilla Forces, an explicitly anarchist militant group in Rojava seeking to defend the revolution and advance the cause of anarchism. The role of the IRPGF. The IRPGF is a militant, armed, self-organized, and horizontal collective working to defend social revolutions around the world, to directly confront capital and the state, and advance the cause of anarchism. We recognize and affirm that principled action necessitates principled politics. We are not a political party or platform, but rather an armed collective comprised of comrades with different anarchist positions. The IRPGF's collective unity manifests itself in practice of militant action, which we consider a prerequisite for achieving liberation. Our role is twofold: to be an armed force capable of defending liberatory social revolutions around the world, while simultaneously being a force capable of insurrection and struggle against all chiriacal forms of power wherever they exist. We do not enter conflict zones with intent to command, but rather, while retaining our autonomy as a collective, to fight alongside other armed groups in solidarity with those who are oppressed, exploited, and facing annihilation. The IRPGF believes collective action, solidarity, and unity are necessary for struggle. International solidarity is the most powerful weapon of the oppressed. Militant, horizontal, self-organized collectives and communities for the revolution and anarchism, IRPGF. This week, Antifa attacked the headquarters of the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party in Athens, Greece, and there's a nice video showing some of the smashing. The protester who was shot at the Milo event in Seattle, Washington, this was a month and a half ago, has finally spoken to reporters. They say that during their hospital stay, they married their partner. They still support the Second Amendment right to bear arms, although he himself does not carry a gun, and also explained why they do not want the shooter to go to prison, but hope to achieve restorative justice by entering into a dialogue with the attacker. The person who was attacked is going by the name Hex, and you can read more, of course, at Anarchist News. William Powell, the author of the Anarchist Cookbook, early 70s document that sort of has tarred anarchists ever since, has finally died at the age of 66. When he was a teenager, angry at the government in the Vietnam War, he walked into the main branch of the New York Public Library in 1969 and began research for a handbook on causing violent mayhem. Over the next months, he studied military manuals and learned the essentials of do-it-yourself warfare, including how to make dynamite, how to convert a shotgun into a grenade launcher, how to blow up a bridge. What emerged, the Anarchist Cookbook, a diagram and recipe-filled manifesto that's believed to have been used as a source in heinous acts of violence since its publication in 1971, now is dead. Michael Schmidt is back in the news. This week there are two stories that are basically statements from different organizations that had collaborated with Michael Schmidt in the past. The first one is a group called the Institute for Anarchist Theory and History. So we'll read a little bit from their statements. On September 28, 2015, Michael Schmidt was suspended from the IATH, a multinational research project in the Global South. This followed shocking claims by U.S.-based publisher AK Press that South African-based Michael Schmidt, a well-known writer on anarchism, was an undercover fascist and white nationalist seeking to infiltrate the anarchist movement. The serious charges demanded immediate action. Michael Schmidt was thereby completely excluded from IATH decisions, internal processes, and new publishing 18 months ago, pending investigations. Here's a bulleted list that comes out of their conclusions. We defend our anarchist current's long history of fighting all forms of domination and exploitation, including colonialism, fascism, imperialism, racism, and reactionary nationalism. We reject unreservedly statements and activities attributed to Michael Schmidt that express fascist and racist views, regardless for his reasons. We note serious weaknesses in Michael Schmidt's replies so far to his accusers. Michael Schmidt's publicly admitted actions to frustrate earlier investigations into allegations of right-wing activity by the Zabalaza Anarchist Communist Front were unethical as individuals, as IATH, and our associated political organizations and networks. We were not involved in and completely distance ourselves from these unacceptable actions. And finally, we note that this saga has been used to tarnish by association a wide range of anarchist and syndicalist groups, individuals and currents, and unjust accusations by critics. The second statement is from the Anarchismo Project, which is an international website that at least a quarter of it, of which is in English, so that we can see it. And this is the Anarchismo Group Network's statement on the Schmidt case and proposed commission of inquiry. In our last statement on the Michael Schmidt case and the accusations by journalists Alexander Reed Ross and Joshua Stevens that he is a fascist and white nationalist that attempted to infiltrate the anarchist movement, we said that the Anarchismo Network had decided to, quote, call for a commission of inquiry to investigate more closely both the accusations and the defense and to make recommendations to the broader anarchist movement based on their findings, end quote. One of the reasons for doing so was because we felt it was difficult for us as a network to draw definitive conclusions about this case based on the evidence provided so far by both sides, because to do so would require translating all the material accusations and defense into numerous languages in order to allow debate in each organization, with organizations then debating each other through their delegates to the Anarchismo Network, a process we knew would be impossible to carry out in our current capacity without sacrificing other daily activities. We therefore felt that an international commission of inquiry, or ethics commission, that would include members of other tendencies and non-affiliated anarchists in order to avoid partiality, and that would be able to evaluate all the relevant evidence and information without first having to translate it into all the numerous languages and then present its findings and recommendations to the broader anarchist movement, would be a more efficient process while still adhering to democratic and federalist principles. This was because we wanted to resolve the matter without delay, because the accusations against Schmidt are extremely serious and we take the issue of fighting racism and white supremacy as high priority. But, regrettably, it's been over a year since we announced our intention to convene a commission of inquiry, and it has not yet materialized. As we have said in the framework under discussion, the proposed commission is not intended to decide or pronounce on whether Schmidt or anyone else involved is implicated by the case is anarchist or not. It's not about punishing or exonerating anyone. It's about breaking the mentality within the anarchist movement of giving medals to those who are really an anarchist, or who exposes someone as not being an anarchist. It's about establishing whether people's conduct and the way it's been dealt with generally have been constructive, consistent with anarchist values and principles, and congruent with our vision of non-hierarchical social transformation. It's about setting a precedent and drawing lessons from the experience to help us as a movement deal with similar cases in the future in a mature and constructive way, consistent with our goals and principles. We will make a final verdict after the commission has been concluded and publish another statement taking its findings and recommendations into account the Anarchismo Network. There were a couple nearly mainstream articles about different activities and events around the U.S. this week. The first one being Anarchist Book Fair Explores Fascism and the Political Hierarchy, which was from which concerned the Orange County Anarchist Book Fair that happened last weekend, and was only slightly insulting. The reporting group was called The Sundial. I think it was a university newspaper, and was only slightly condescending towards the speakers and the event in general. The other was an article about the Wooden Shoe, which is a long-running bookstore in Philadelphia. This was a much more directly insulting article talking about the members of the collective, the organization of the book fair, but I guess all press is good press, right? There was an interesting editorial by some cat whose last name is Lemons on an event that happened in the Arizona Capitol last Sunday. Gun-toting left-wingers demonstrate at the Arizona Capitol. Is bloodshed on the horizon? This is mostly a bad faith or not really journalistic communication with the John Brown Gun Club that... I'll just read a little bit of it. Hey, lefties with guns. That's cool. At least that was my first impression upon seeing about 40 or so assorted anarchists, brown berets, and members of a group calling itself the Phoenix John Brown Gun Club, across the street from the state capitol, openly armed to the proverbial teeth. I was late to the pro-Trump Make America Great Again march, which began at Cesar Chavez Plaza, after some confusion about the demonstration starting at the new past tense Patriots Square Park and ended at the lawn of the Arizona Capitol. Anyways, the quote-unquote journalist had sort of a running argument with the marchers who didn't want to be videotaped and, of course, were heavily armed. And more or less the conclusion of this journalist was that if the anarchists were to meet up with the Make America Great crowd, that there is likely to be bloodshed. There's a nice hashtag, HUEYAPAN, Manifesto for the Autonomy. This is actually a nice video about a village in Mexico. Huepan Autonomy and Libertarian Self-Government aim to various objectives. A collective and anti-capitalist economy that's self-run by the farmers, artisans, and small local business people, focusing on producing riches to be available to everyone in a communal treasury. A direct democracy, without payrolls and political parties, to elect their representatives from each block and from each neighborhood, forming councils with a right of revocation that delegates different tasks of administration and supervision. The restrengthening of the community group Los Tigres, an organ of autonomous security that since 2014 has organized against the abuses and arbitrary detentions of the state police and to prevent the clandestine cutting of the forest, the rescue of our indigenous language, and the wide commercialization of the local arts and crafts. The ITS, or Individuals Tending Towards the Wild, issued their 26th communique. The ITS communiques are always interesting because oftentimes they reflect on current anarchist discussions, and oftentimes they reflect an internet focus on behalf of the individuals tending towards the wild. So this particular communique is more gossipy than usual, with some criticisms directed at the FAI, actual bodily threats directed towards John Zerzan, and some snark directed towards Joaquin Garcia, who sits in a jail cell. To read a little bit from the communique. ITS will stop at nothing. We don't make warning calls after planting an explosive, as CCF does in Greece. We detonate it, and that's it. We have no consideration for society. We forget about the noble standards of not wounding innocents. We are proud that our method has spread and that others have taken it as their own. At the end of the day, this is all for the annihilation of moral progress, so that we can dance over the disgusting corpse of repulsive humanism. P.S. The indiscriminate group Tending Towards the Wild, GITS, has a few days ago declared a new project apart from ITS Mexico. We are happy to know that as its own group, it has decided to go its separate way. we recognize and endorse their war. However, we do not agree with what they have said concerning leaving behind certain terms merely because the leftists use them. Certainly it's disturbing when radical progressives, or not, appropriate the terms that we defend, but the solution for us, at least, is not to cease using them merely because other people have taken them as their own. On the contrary, we choose to make these terms so menacing that only their mention fills the hyper-civilized with terror. So much so that the leftists think twice about appropriating these terms for themselves. Otherwise, let each take up what they find most accommodating to them, and let everyone draw their own conclusions. Finally, there's the announcement from Portland, Oregon. Make May Day anarchist again. In this year, we have seen some of the strongest anarchist resistance to the current American government since the early 20th century. Whether we discuss the riots in D.C., or the pothole fixers in Portland, Oregon, anarchists have been gaining national traction as the force that will resist the new president at every step he makes, as well as his supporting base. Okay, media projects. Again, another very busy week in media projects. This week is the announcement of the brand new Submedia website, which is actually at sub.media. It's a video production ensemble which aims to promote anarchist and anti-capitalist ideas and aid social struggles through the dissemination of radical films and videos. Founded in 1994, Submedia has produced hundreds of videos on everything from the anti-globalization protests to films about shoplifting. Our films have been screened around the world in social centers and movie theaters and have been watched by millions on the internet. The site is a collection of videos from 2003 onwards. In the mainstream media, it appears that there's going to be a movie, basically based on the Rolling Stones article, The Anarchists vs. ISIS. Daniel Spinoza is set to direct the film adaptation, which would star Jake Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal is re-teaming with his life director, Espinoza, for an adaptation of the Rolling Stone article, written by Seth Harp, which tells the true story of a ragtag team of American volunteers, socialists, and outcasts who were fighting alongside the Kurdish militia known as the YPG to beat ISIS in Syria and establish an anarchist collective amid the rubble of war. There's a brand new announcement for issue 2 of the publication Elpis. Elpis began as a favor to a friend who asked a few perpetual depressives for reading recommendations. We responded with a collection of our favorite pieces of nihilism and pessimism that we thought might have something to offer less dour anarchists taking an excursion to the bleaker side of things. Sadness doesn't only come when called, however, and neither do we. We are now accepting submissions for a second issue of Elpis to contain only original pieces of nihilism and pessimism directed towards an anarchist audience. What would you say to those eternal optimists, whether they want to hear you or not? If you're interested, please send a short pitch, approximately 200 words of length, to elpis@littleblackheart.com. Plan to have completed rough drafts submitted no later than July 31st. And finally, there's a brand new website launched from Eugene, Oregon. It's at eugeneanarchist.org. Provides a central point for getting involved with and learning about anarchist activity in Eugene, Oregon, Springland, Corvallis, Lane County, and the U of O. This Week in Podcasts, The Anarchists, Episode 4, Encryption, Death, and the Latest Failures of the Trumpenfuhrer, The Anarchists Debate the Security versus Liberty Arguments Regarding State Snooping, The Argument for Not Using Corporate Tools, The Panopticon Effect, The Focus of the State Being on Dissent, Not on Terrorism, Based on the Efforts that They're Actually Making, Some Tools for Security, HTTPS Everywhere and Tor, Mortality Rising for White Middle Class People Since the Turn of the Century, Deaths by Despair in Both the U.S. and Britain, The Drug War Being a Red Herring, Unpopular Regimes and Disjunctive Presidencies, Healthcare Models, Problems of Profit in Healthcare, The Benefit of the UK-Style Model. Anarchy Radio, John Zerzan's Tuesday night radio show, starts out with a critique of the Orange County Anarchist Book Fair for being too leftist and for representing Marxist groups. The DSA actually tabled at the event. Goes on to hopelessness and death and violence, pollution in China, sewage in the Puget Sound, poisoned orcas, mocks the frequency of ITS communiques and the complaints about lack of coverage, and then complains about them calling him a senile hippie and joking about having him killed, praise museum exhibits for realistic negativity, gets a call on what would an anarchist society look like, radically decentralized, smaller population, getting back to where we were, action briefs, and then technology. Oh, sorry, technology is bad. There's a new audio zine, two essays, Insurrectionary Anarchy, Organizing for Attack, and Without a Trace, both from issue number 10 of Do or Die, which is about 15 years old. The Final Straw Radio, A Tilted Guide to Being a Defendant, Sean Swain reads from a book by Nobel Prize-winning author Weasel from Sean's Prison Reading Group, and an interview with one of the authors of the book, A Tilted Guide to Being a Defendant. This book is about the reality of facing charges and how the state is expert at tricking people. It gives ideas about how to stay strong in the face of that, and challenges us to challenge our practices so that we become stronger instead. It is significant for having received input from thousands of political prisoners. This week's topic of the week was on subcultures. As people who occupy marginal social spaces, we often find ourselves interacting with or part of other, often not political or not necessarily political, subcultures. One of the most obvious examples would be punk and its long history of anarchism, but we would also include media fandoms, furries, gaming circles, and others. While some of these may contain an explicit anarchist ethos or aesthetic, again, punk, many do not, yet still share cultural practices we might see as familiar, more intimate and supportive interpersonal relationships, experimenting with alternative ways of living, hatred of normies, and sharing of resources, to name a few. Do you belong to a subculture that isn't an anarchist one? Do you find yourself acting differently in that space than in anarchist spaces? Are there things you find interesting about that space from an anarchist perspective, or is it all just for fun? This week, I am joined by who knows, and we're going to talk a little bit about subcultures.
So I'm one of the many who do come from the punk subculture that introduced me to anarchism. More specifically, through the band Man is the Bastard, from the same person that introduced me to veganism. I volunteered at a music venue for 7 years, all through high school.
So what does subculture mean to you in the context of anarchism? Is anarchism a subculture?
I don't think anarchism is a subculture, period, but I think that anarchism has subcultures and consists... There's a specific anarchist subculture and then several other... subcultures orbiting that, maybe.
Yeah, this week I think we're focusing quite a bit on the fact that anarchism as a subculture is absolutely not a unified thing, and in fact perhaps would there might be time for a reformation.
I think it's pretty clear for sure. I mean, I think that there's more specific subcultures maybe in different locales that don't necessarily bleed into other cities or.
Do you find that most anarchists that you associate with come from the punk counterculture?
That's a good question. I think probably yes.
So that's still the case?
I think so. I think, it's hard to... It's kind of hard to pinpoint. I feel like most of... It's hard to think of any of them not coming through punk.
I feel like I started to meet a lot more people who came through an academic experience after 1999 and the events in Seattle and the quote-unquote anti-globalization movement?
I've had a lot of friends and people I've met who have been influenced by those politics, but haven't taken it to anarchism. And I think that there is something about punk, or at least the lyrics maybe that come along with it, that like give that extra boost potentially. Or maybe not necessarily that, but the rebelliousness beyond the politics, maybe.
You're so a little involved in punk.
I do art for bands. Mm-hmm. More specifically, metal, and do metal and such. So, I still enjoy punk. It's not the thing I listen to the most.
Do you still go to like a show a month?
I go to shows more frequently nowadays when friends are passing through. Mm-hmm. I still definitely have a lot of friends who are in punk bands and who that's my chance to get to see them is when they're on tour. And then I'll like be the bum that makes them put me on the guest list because I'm broke. But it's fun. I just saw someone from years and years ago at a show seeing a different friend play who was in this band George Washington in Arizona. But him and all the other punks, or a few other punks, worked at the DMV. And it was mostly punks at the DMV, and they all had 666 in their license plate.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Incredibly silly.
Indeed.
I think that that's the thing that's the most shocking to me. At certain points in my life, I was perhaps a year or two too old to be doing the thing that I was doing. But by and large, like how it is that you're supposed to mature and track, I have pretty much followed those things along, at least entirely appropriately for my age. So now, you know, in my late 40s, I'm at basically the peak of my career, and I'm going to do this for another, you know, 10 to 15 years or perhaps 30 years, and then I'll retire. And so the thing about punk, when I look at it now, is it really feels like it's this... like last night, I drove by Gilman, the Gilman Street Project at 924 Gilman, and the kids were dressed the exact same that they would have been dressed 30-odd years ago. And so the way in which punk has absolutely set itself inside of society as like a tracking mechanism, mm-hmm. to me is very surprising. And I wonder to what extent that future exists for anarchists.
Like
your generation of anarchists... Right, so in the early 30s mm-hmm. Age set, during my generation, very very few people made it to your age. Mm-hmm. But for your generation, almost the entire set of you that have been around for the past 10 to 15 years are still around. And that's sort of similar to punk in a way, mm-hmm. where you know, just around my time, punks aged out and were done. But nowadays, it seems like there's more and more of a sort of body of people who use subculture as their cultural reference, mm-hmm. and rather than sort of the dismissive way in which a lot of radical political people talk about subcultures as something you grow out of, mm-hmm. Not of course admitting to the fact that radical subculture, radical politics tends to be one of those mechanisms. It seems like now there's actually a space for subcultures to be the way in which you can identify with the world forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that like maybe the punk and anarchist tendencies that can keep people in the scene or whatever, like there's so much organizing and stuff that goes into punk and putting on shows and drawing people together and trying to create things that speak to people in certain ways.
And you're saying those skills are the same skills that are useful in anarchist circles.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that a lot of those, like, when you put so much time and energy and passion into those things, like, similar to punk, when you become real attached to this thing, I think that putting that work into those things around anarchism develops a similar, like, I don't just want to drop out. Like, it's worth staying in it for the long run more so.
Hmm. I actually... tend to see this phenomena as resulting more from the lack of opportunities that your generation in particular has. In other words, There isn't a gold ring that you can grab that's going to lift you away from the subcultures that you were raised in. In other words, you're probably going to be broke for the rest of your life, so you might as well do the things that you love.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. Well, and that's... I've always volunteered, like I said, at the music venue and such, kind of instilled like voluntaristic behavior in me where I wanted to be putting my energy into something that was not a paid... Like, I was still working at the movie theater, like, shitty job at the same time, and GameStop and whatever crap, Best Buy, you know, but definitely, like, was still held together by putting my energy into the music venue art gallery that was a non-profit or whatever, but
yeah, was... When we talk about selling out, you know, usually we talk about someone who moves on to some better than middle class lifestyle, and that seems so impossible. That just seems like I can't imagine someone nowadays leaving punk rock to sell out. Mm-hmm. You know, because obviously you had Green Day, which was for my generation, and that's it. I mean, mm-hmm. like all the bands that sold out in the 90s, they made one record on a big label and they were done. It just seems like that sort of whole way of thinking, which I'm sure people are so accused of, mm-hmm. it's just so marginal compared to what actually living in capitalism looks like.
No, totally. And I definitely remember as a kid, or as a young punk even, being like, yeah, selling out is like the lowest of the low. But it's pretty remarkable how little I think about that term, at least. Mm-hmm. But still definitely think about like my ethics of my art or what I'm producing and such, but I'm not concerned about that in the...
Do you identify with any of the arguments that come out of the anti-subcultural anarchist perspective that basically says that we're never going to be taken seriously by a more mainstream audience as long as we continue to sort of look like freaks and behave like freaks?
I think that there's some something to that. I was just commenting with someone walking downtown Berkeley the other day, and someone looked at me, and I forget the name that he said, but we looked it up, and it was some old, like, hippie Berkeley personality, and we're looking at all these pictures of, like, these radical, hippie, young Berkeley people, and just talking about what a humongous difference those people are, even... though they, like, aesthetically look the same and hang out in the same street and do probably a lot of the same shit as the people that are doing it now, like, how much of a different impact and, but then fading impact that those people had, how it's hard to imagine, kind of, unfortunately, hard to imagine constructing something like that in a place today. Like, today, in a place like, Berkeley or somewhere, I feel, or maybe it would happen spontaneously, but it's hard to imagine... It almost, even though I feel like at the same time that it's almost ripe for it because not a lot of people have been jumping on that sort of, or pushing or being proactive. And
has the internet killed subcultures or has it exploded subcultures?
That's a pretty, I think it's probably killed a lot of the traditional methods that subcultures proliferate. And that maybe that's the reason that it would be hard to imagine like a downtown Berkeley exploding in a subcultural way, because it probably would be more infused through the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to imagine. When I grew up, we had a space that we all went to. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our lives were about evading the authorities that would stop us from hanging out at that space.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just as a very simple example... Nobody had cell phones, right? I was mm-hmm. a teenager before cell phones. And nowadays, pretty much every teenager, especially a middle-class teenager, has a cell phone by which their parents communicate with them. And the sort of the only rule that most kids operate by is you have to answer the phone if I'm calling you.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have ruined my teenage years entirely.
Well, I definitely grew up bringing a quarter in my pocket... also, and then was at the point in high school when cell phones mm-hmm. were a thing. But we definitely hung out also, like, outside of the movie theater. We never went to see movies. Somebody told me about your man's
this week in detail. Clearly, this week, a lot of the conversation at Anarchist News was about the newest Alexander E. Dross piece, which more or less was about the intellectual similarities between post-left anarchists and fascism. Ham-handed effort. The nicest reply was by Sean Wilbur, who I mentioned earlier. His blog post was called Notes on the Anarchist Culture Wars, and I'm going to read a little part of it. With regard to the courting of anarchists by authoritarians, and as someone who's been so courted on various occasions, it seems to me that the key vulnerability among radicals is not attraction to certain authors or ideas, but particular ways of interacting with ideas. And that vulnerability is widespread in the milieu, with perhaps the more dangerous instances involving ideas that are not themselves so obviously edgy. What is required for someone to slide from Stirner towards fascism, from Proudhon towards monarchy, from Bakunin towards actual dictatorship, etc., is for a few generally uncharacteristic bits of their thought to be disconnected from their context, elevated in importance, and then associated with similarly disconnected bits of authoritarian thought, with some of the eclecticism, syncretism, and outright opportunism as the guiding philosophy. The alt-right has made this sort of opportunistic hodgepodge thinking a fairly explicit policy. Unfortunately, many radicals also engage in it, without much sense of the stakes. The result is a convergence of people who aren't really all that interested in ideas, except as potential capital to put behind projects with some less philosophical basis, or as a sort of personal adornment. And these people, whether they identify with the right or the left, tend to tell a story about theory that assumes ideas are generally mixable. No idea is really very distant from any other, provided you simply disregard the bits that establish distance, and of course, clarity. When do we find people swept from one position to another? I suspect these are very often people who rather enjoy the fact that many ideas are dangerous, but aren't so concerned about using ideas in any very serious way. Philosophy, like ideology, can be just another recreational drug. When we lose these people, we probably have to acknowledge that we only had them in a very limited sense in the first place. But if you can come to terms with anarchy, then you have not only gained an ideal, but presumably have also mastered a skill. And that skill, it seems to me, is one that best protects us whenever we're dealing with dangerous ideas. It might even simply involve the recognition that all ideas are dangerous, which is pretty good inoculation against all the various systems and schemes that are peddled from every direction. There's also a nice piece that came in. Let's see what the URL is. It looks like I don't see a URL, but maybe it was just an anonymous submission. But what's nice about it was called Solidarity and Broken Windows in Pittsburgh, and it really contextualizes a recent event that happened this past week with some things that happened in the way, way past. And it really talks about some of the intersections between sort of the activities that we do and what actual resistance looks like. And, of course, what the battle against liberals looks like in the hindsight. So much of it is good that you really should read the whole article. Again, it's called Solidarity and Broken Windows in Pittsburgh. And finally, in a deeper look, there's a pretty funny piece this week called We Get Knocked Down, But We Get Up Again. Regressive Transportation Policy Under the Mercury-Pluto Square. On March 22nd, as transportation planet Mercury in Aries formed a square to illegitimate power and authority, hierarchy, Pluto in Capricorn, the neoconservative Brad Wall government in Saskatchewan, my home province, announced in its budget that it will be shutting down the province's bus system. Yes, that's right. No public debate, no public consultation, no transportation alternatives offered. It's just over, because Brad Wall and his buddies say it is. This government is full of one-car-per-person drivers, decided that it can unilaterally eliminate Pluto, a mass transportation system, Mercury, that people throughout the province have relied on for over 70 years. Quote, it's going to be quite a nightmare, passengers outraged by STC closure, end quote, by Jason Warwick of CBC News. The Pluto and Capricorn bulldozer strikes again, creating a nightmarish and potentially deadly Pluto, transportation scenario, Mercury, for many. And then this article concludes with, as many of you know, I'm an anarchist, and I don't believe in the mechanism of government. This is a prime example of why. This government is not doing what's best for the people it claims to serve. It's harming the sick, the disabled, the poor, and the vulnerable to prop up its own bullshit facade as a fiscally responsible, no-deficit conservative government. Imagine what we could do on this planet if we were not being constantly attacked, eroded, and hamstrung by these establishments and institutions, by illegitimate people in positions of illegitimate power. A better world for everyone is not only possible, it's necessary. We all deserve a world that does not prop up certain human beings on the backs of other human beings. We deserve a world that does not benefit some by hurting others. Imagine this world, and keep it in your mind's eye always, because that's what we're working for. That's why we're here, and that's why I'm writing this. I know the people of Saskatchewan, myself included, will find a way. We will because we have to, and that's always been the way of it in Saskatchewan. We'll all find a better way through these times together, no matter where we live, as long as we're being ruled by power-hungry, outdated, and treacherous beasts, because we have to find a better way. There is no alternate option. What is an example of something I could do today that is anarchist? Is anarchism just a political idea that could happen someday? Or is it something that could impact my life today? First answer is by someone named Mr. This Body. Anarchy is meaningless if it doesn't impact your life. This is true of any ideology. Why hold fast to a set of rules or principles if they're not advantageous? As I see it, this is the problem with most anarchists today. They spout some reformed Marxist leftist social ideology of some chauvinist ideology of corporate worship, i.e. anarcho-capitalists, wherein individuals are reduced to cogs in the greater community machine. But anarchists should use ideas as tools, not be used by ideas or ideologies as tools themselves. The latter option isn't freedom, and freedom is the essence of anarchy. In short, anarchy is an experience, not a program. And it's something intensely personal. It must be of your own making. Use others' opinions to further your own ends, not the other way around. If anarchy means no rulers, any autonomous action is anarchistic. So the field is open, my friend. Do what you want and be happy. This is the anarchy of now. Not some socio-religious belief in a future utopia, something which isn't even possible. Let the true believers sacrifice their joy, their freedom, their very lives for that fantasy, the fantasy of anarchism, while you live out your own version of anarchy. Pose your own questions to yourself. What could you do right now to make yourself freer, intellectually, bodily, emotionally? Don't wait. Life is too short. The next response is from Apio Lude. Stop asking ridiculous questions like this and start thinking for yourself about how to take your own life into your own hands here and now. And the third response is by Dot. To address the second part of your question first, it depends on your idea of anarchism. If I had to answer more concretely, I'd say it's both. If you check out the question, what is anarchism? Then it's clear that there are a variety of ways that anarchism is relevant to our daily practices, and it's all around us, at least as potential, all the time. And there's also a way that anarchy is so far away from our current situation as to be untouchable. So one thing that you could do today that some would consider anarchist is to refuse to go to an authority figure in order to get something done. Another thing is to work with a peer to do something that is to your mutual benefit, especially outside of capitalism, and that helps, or at least doesn't hurt, other folks. Finally this week, to learn more, for an introduction to anarchism, go to the URL anarchy101.org. For books and other anarchist material, check out littleblackcart.com, LBC. For news and up-to-the-minute commentary and conversation, anarchistnews.org. To email us about this podcast, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Thanks to Lynn O'Mabel for the sound editing work and for the participation in the Topic of the Week conversation. See you next week.